trying to keep a sense of humor, battling a deadly disease. Local broadcaster Joe Blair shares his struggle with COVID-19, the long separation from his family, and the dread of not knowing how the story would end. I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, my conversation with Joe Blair and his wife, Lori, who was also diagnosed with the virus, but with few symptoms. Joe talks about his month-long hospital stay, including 3 stints in intensive care, also entertaining nurses playing his acoustic guitar, and a parade outside the hospital, celebrating his birthday and release to go home. The Blairs are now healthy and busy again with their TV projects, tasting the tri-state and golfing the tri-state. 2 Main Street is next, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management. From the WNIN Tri-State Public Media Center, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Well, it's a new year, and the world has high hopes for the vaccines to curb the spread of COVID-19 and now its variants. I recently received my first Pfizer vaccine and will soon receive my second shot. With so many cases in recent months, chances are you know someone who has contracted the virus, and maybe you know someone close to you who has died. Well, my guests on 2 Main Street are a married couple sharing their personal journey with COVID-19, including a lengthy hospital stay and separation, and then a public celebration. Joe and Lori Blair are my guests. Joe is a well-known radio personality. He and Lori run ICR Advertising in Evansville, which includes Lori's TV show, Tasting the Tri-State, and Joe's TV show, Golfing the Tri-State. So, guys, welcome to 2 Main Street. Good to have you here.
Thank you, David.
You're looking healthy.
Thank you. Yes. I feel healthy.
Well, good. You look healthy. Definitely.
It hasn't been long either. It took a while.
Now, both of you, of course, were diagnosed with COVID-19, but Joe, you were slammed with the virus. What were those very first symptoms, Joe?
Oh, gosh. It was a sore throat and just kind of a little bit of a fever. Kind of like we had the flu.
Mm-hmm. Lori, did you notice this?
She was sick at the same time.
I was sick at the same time, but with mine, it was the polar opposite. I was tired one afternoon, took a nap, woke up, and I couldn't smell for a week, and that was it. That was all I had.
Wow.
And my taste changed a little bit. Like, Raisin Bran tasted like that kasha stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You ever had that kasha?
Yes.
It's cereal, but it's not really cereal. But it kind of tasted like that to me. But I could taste something. And then I didn't get better. All the rest of the family got better. And finally, Lori and my youngest daughter came to me, who works at Columbia Healthcare, said, "Dad, you got to go to the ER. Let's go. Let's just see what they say." And I wasn't having a hard time breathing. But as soon as I got checked and they popped me in a hospital bed because I had double pneumonia, I couldn't breathe. And I'm not psychosomatic at all. So it picked that time to get me. And I was down, if you know anything about blood oxygen count, I was at like 82 to 85, which is struggling to breathe. And that started my days at Deaconess.
Now, when was this?
That was October 13th.
No, it was earlier than that, I think.
Well, I got sick first week of October.
Yeah, or last part of September, because it was pretty much all of October into that first week of November.
So, but it was October 12th before I sought out the doctors.
Okay.
And then that's when it got hard to breathe.
That's right, you're right. Mm-hmm.
And was in until November 10th.
Yep.
Now, you were at Deaconess Midtown.
Midtown.
And was it over a month?
It was right at a month.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you in intensive care at all?
Intensive care 3 times.
Really?
They took me to intensive care my second day and a couple of times after that. Because I would get better, and they put me in a regular room. I was in 10 different rooms.
Really?
In 30 days, I was in 10 different rooms. And then they would move me back to intensive care because I'd have what I called an episode, where I'd go way down to like 80% and couldn't breathe. And
were you ever on a ventilator?
They were going to put me on a ventilator once, but I kind of said, I don't want to go on one. They said, well, we'll see. Mm-hmm. You're close. So after about 5 or 10 minutes, my levels came up, and they said, I think we're going to be okay. You're going to be all right. We'll see.
So, Lori, were you in contact with the medical people at all time on this during this journey?
Trying to. And what was a little bit difficult, first of all, it was a surge of corona. And there was so many cases that what happened was, that's the reason why Joe was changing rooms. Some rooms would have an oxygen system that somebody might need, but Joe didn't need that much at that time, but then he needed it again. So there was a lot of changing around. So from all the nurses' stations and all the different people that I was trying to stay in contact with, as many doctors and healthcare workers as I possibly could, to kind of get answers, but a lot of times we didn't have the answers because they didn't have the answers. Everything's right. So new with this that it was very difficult to...
Very new. They would tell you because, well, I was the one who had a hard time breathing, and they would say, Joe, breathe in the flowers and blow out the candles on the birthday cake. So with your nose. Use your nose. Breathe in, blow out, breathe in, blow out. I did that as well as I could. I bring my levels back up after a while. But one day, after like 3 weeks, in came a respiratory therapist. And, well, I back up. I'm a guitar player and singer, right? So I'm feeling better after a couple of weeks. I had Lori bring my acoustic guitar. So I was playing the guitar and making up a blues song, you know, oh, the deaconess babes, oh, the nurses are great, you know, that kind of stuff. And they were watching my numbers, and they went, Your oxygen's going up. You went from 90 to 96. That's weird. And just from singing, go keep singing, keep singing. So then, about a week later, in comes a respiratory therapist, and I was breathing in the birthday cake and blowing out the candles, or the
flowers.
The flowers and blowing out the candles. Anyway, she said, no, breathe from your diaphragm. That's how you want to breathe. And the light went off. I was in choir. I was in state choir and stuff like that. They teach you to sing from your diaphragm. And so that's what I was doing. I was breathing correctly for COVID and didn't even know it. But that's one thing that we found out. And I hope, nurses, if you're listening, that's what you have them breathe from their diaphragms. And whenever I would concentrate on my diaphragm, my percentages would go straight up. And less than a week later, I got to go home because of that, therapy, mm-hmm. basically. So yeah, breathe from your diaphragm at all costs.
Now, you mentioned that everybody was kind of confused about what was going on.
Frustration from not being able to treat something that they would know. They know heart, liver. Mm-hmm. They know things that are pretty tried and true and tested. Mm-hmm. And this thing is so unpredictable, and it just attacks different people in so many different ways.
Some people were having kidney problems mm-hmm. in the next room. I was having my lung collapsed also with the pneumonia. And there were some that had heart problems.
Right, and these things were typically things that were pre-existing conditions, mm-hmm. not with Joe, because Joe had no pre-existing conditions. He wasn't overweight. He didn't have any problems with his lungs, He was blood type O, which is the type that apparently never gets COVID. I mean, everything that wasn't
yeah,
was
right,
Joe. So it was really confusing. And,
sure.
And because of that unpredictability, I think there was just a lot of
a
trial and error,
but
mainly.
But they were fantastic, though.
They were wonderful people. At every station that I called, they would try to find out. They would mm-hmm. put me in touch with a doctor. The doctors would call me back. So it was very great care.
It really was.
Now, you weren't able to see Joe, though, during this time, were you?
And unfortunately, right after he got into the hospital, it was our 21st wedding anniversary. So mm-hmm.
we
missed
didn't see
that.
Each other then.
And then on his 60th birthday, we got to be together.
Yeah.
And that was the time he was coming out.
They had the parade.
Yeah, mm-hmm. on his 60th birthday.
Well, tell us about the parade. How did that get started?
That was Lori and my daughters.
We were sitting there and...
What can we do for Dad?
What can we do for Dad for his 60th birthday? We wanted to do something big, but we couldn't. So, and a lot of people were reaching out to us from church, from... our clients, our friends, everybody who knows Joe, especially on Facebook. And so we just decided, well, Mamie, our oldest daughter, who works with us at the agency, said, let's do a parade. I'm going, a parade? Yeah. Okay, let's do a parade. Well, she pulled it all together. We wrote a press release. We sent it out because that's what we do with our company also for our clients. We sent it out, and it was so well received, incredibly, that we thought, okay, I guess this is going to work. And then Columbia, where Malia, our other daughter, works, had similar drive-by celebrations of, you know, waving to the patients and residents over at Columbia. So she knew where to tell people to park, how to do it, how to manage it, and it just worked out.
That was neat.
It was a great celebration.
Now we're talking to the Blairs, Joe and Lori, about their journey with COVID-19. And so, Joe, you're sitting on the curbside in your wheelchair watching the parade go by.
Yeah, waving at people. They were beeping at me when they... Signs hanging out the windows. Hey, Joe, glad you're better. Happy
so
birthday.
How did that make you feel?
Real good. Mm-hmm. It was a good 60th birthday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, how long after the parade were you released? How long was it?
The next day.
Oh, the very next day.
The very next day. They were talking to me that day that it was possible I could go home that day. But it was the next day.
So that was your send-off, too, leaving the hospital.
Yeah, but then I had to go back because I got nipped by... pneumonia again, only it wasn't viral, it was
bacterial,
which
was actually a blessing.
Really?
Can I tell why it was a blessing?
Sure, please.
So he was on oxygen when he came home, and he was spiking fevers. And it was
in the afternoon.
It was a Thursday that he would get a fever, and then the Friday, this is right after he came home. And then we called the doctor, and she said, just make sure, go on down to the ER Saturday morning. I'm not super concerned, but let's see. So Joe went down to the ER, and I had to leave him there. And he was admitted and diagnosed with bacterial pneumonia, to which he had 3 days of four-hour IVs for antibiotics.
Penicillin-based.
But the cool thing was it fixed him. He got home and no longer needed oxygen, no longer felt dragging. I mean, you didn't need anything at home.
I was weak because it's amazing. I had an alarm on my bed. So if I get out, the alarm would go off. And they'd run back, get back into bed. You're a fall risk. So, but when you're in bed like that for that long, your legs go. Hmm. I mean, you almost can't stand up.
He lost 35 pounds in a month.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Hard to eat when he would eat. His oxygen would go down.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Just because he'd always need the mask on.
So how long did it take get the legs back under you?
That was a couple of weeks before I could walk without oxygen, really. But then, you know, now I'm really strong.
Yeah.
Now, after COVID-19, do you go back for regular visits? Do you have something called pulmonary rehab? Do you still do that?
No, I was doing so well that I didn't need to do that.
Really?
So
good.
My oxygen came back pretty strong. Mm-hmm. And then there was some physical therapy, but I was doing well on my own because I was finally out of bed, walking around the house, and I got strong pretty quick. So I wouldn't recommend that for everyone, but, you know,
every case is different.
This old
for
strong
sure.
Norwegian was okay, but
And you were back on the golf course pretty soon, weren't you?
Well, after 3 weeks, I tried to hit a bucket of balls, and did okay. And now I'm doing real good.
Well, I ran into Lori at a grocery store parking lot, and I said, "Well, where's Joe?" You said he was on the golf course.
Yes.
I said, "Well, I guess he's doing better."
Yeah.
Well, are you guys, of course, you're big advocates for wearing masks and getting vaccinated.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And this is no joke, folks.
It's not. And you don't understand how important it is until you go through something like this. And I don't want anybody to go through it. And
we were wearing our masks. We were being careful.
Yeah. And hardly going out. We were working from home. We were
doing everything you're supposed to do.
Supposed to do.
And you get slammed with it. Wow.
Alakazam, yeah.
My guests are Joe Blair and Lori Maynor Blair, COVID-19 survivors. They have been They have very busy lives in advertising. We're going to hear about their backgrounds in broadcasting. Joe's rock and roll radio days. Remember those? How the couple met, their family, their pets. And they'll probably want, again, to reinforce the importance of wearing a mask and getting vaccinated, folks. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management.
Hi, Jeffrey.
We'll be right back.
All right.
My guests host two popular local TV shows, Tasting the Tri-State and Golfing the Tri-State. Here's a clip on how Joe Blair introduces his show.
Golfing the Tri-State.
Hi, everybody. I'm Joe Blair. Welcome to Golfing the Tri-State. Today, we're at Evansville Country Club. The first golf course in Evansville. What a beautiful place this is. Always the scene of the city golf tournament, the final day. Kevin Wassmer, which we just saw a couple of weeks ago, has won 10 of them. And Mike Reynolds is the PGA Pro here at Evansville Country Club. This guy has quite a pedigree. We're going to have a great day today. Evansville Country Club, golfing the Tri-State. Stay tuned.
And later, we'll share how Lori introduces her show, Tasting the Tri-State. Stay with us. This is 2 Main Street. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guests are Joe Blair and Lori Maynard Blair, hosts of Tasting the Tri-State and Golfing the Tri-State and working together at ICR Advertising, an Evansville firm founded by Lori in 2008. Joe spent more than a month in the hospital with COVID-19. Lori also contracted the virus with very few symptoms, thank goodness. Both are now healthy, back at work. We're going to hear about their latest projects in a moment, including Lori's return to the kitchen, visiting the Hilltop Tavern.
Yes.
But first, let's talk about your family, two daughters, and I understand some grandchildren as well. Tell me about your family, guys.
We have two daughters, Mamie and Malia, 31 and 28. Mm-hmm. We'll be 29. Mm-hmm. Three grandchildren, Ramsey, who's 14, and my buddy, and then two granddaughters that are 6 and 5.
5 and 5.
Five
right
and
now,
five.
They're the same age.
Okay, 5 and 5.
They were born the same year.
Hazel and Evelyn. Hazel was my mother's name. She hated it. And now there is a Hazel, and she loves her name.
That's great.
So that's great, yeah.
Do they all live around here?
Yes.
They do.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. How exciting. You're very fortunate.
Our oldest works with us,
right.
Mamie.
Mamie works with us, does a great job. Mm-hmm. Malia works at Columbia Healthcare, and she's in charge of admissions and...
She's director of marketing
director of marketing.
Columbia.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the early days. How did you guys meet? How did Joe meet Lori and Lori meet Joe?
I was her product, David.
Well.
She sold me.
I moved from West Virginia in 1997 to Evansville.
Where in West Virginia did you grow up?
I moved from Charleston. I was in radio. So I was in radio in West Palm Beach, and I was in radio in various markets, Virginia, West Virginia, and then here.
Doing what?
Radio sales, advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And so I moved to Evansville.
And her then husband became general manager of Fox 7 at that time. And then she went to work at Wiki because she was a radio gal. And I was an indentured servant there.
And then I met Joe, and we just started working together, and from there, we kind of fell in love, and we just went.
She chased me around a lot.
That's not true.
It is true.
It's not true.
IKY.
I wasn't fast enough, David.
At IKY is where
we met. That's where you guys
met. So I would sell breakfast with Blair's and have clients have Joe there to do the shows. And then we moved around a little bit in radio. So after that, I actually worked in TV for a while in sales, and Joe moved stations a little bit. And then actually people kept saying to Joe, how do you do what you do? How do you do what you do on the air? You're number one. You're the radio guy. And so Joe wrote a book called I Can Relate. And it was his system of how he does what he does on the air and how he relates to people,
writing.
Which is really neat for, it's an application for on-air people, for salespeople, just relating to your audience.
Mm-hmm. So, well, we kind of skipped over your schooling. Where did you guys go to school?
Ohio University.
The MAC conference.
Yeah.
She was at Ohio University. I was at Ball State.
Mm-hmm.
Ball State University.
Studying. Communications, both of us.
Both of us. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, get those. Get the alma mater in there.
Oh, yeah,
That's good. You don't want to pass that up. Now, of course, Joe, your voice is very familiar to radio and now TV audiences. You do voiceover work for commercials and, of course, your career at several radio stations in several states. We talked about Lori's bouncing around at stations. Mm-hmm. And now you worked in Philly, is that right?
Yeah, I went to Chattanooga right after college. And I got into radio because I do character voices, basically.
And do Johnny Cash.
Well, I'll tell him Johnny Cash.
All right.
So a guy I worked with in Chattanooga, I was in news in Chattanooga, and that's how I got my name Joe Blair, because there was another guy named Maynor on the air in Chattanooga. The boss came in right before I went on the air the first day and said, "What's your middle name?" I said, "Blair." He says, "You're Joe Blair." I said, "Okay." Well, when I was in trouble, it was Joseph Blair. You get in here right now. So it rolled off the tongue and fit nicely on a coat, so I kept it. And well, anyway, my character voices got me a job in Philadelphia like about 5 months after I went to Chattanooga. And so I did a morning show in Philly with a guy named Larry Coates. Larry Coates, he was the country Don Imus.
Oh, boy.
David, nice to meet you.
The country Don Imus.
That's how he
was. That's a moniker.
Crusty.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, pretty crusty. So I would do my character voices for him, and then I'll tell the Johnny Cash story.
Okay.
Well, the character voices, you've got my attention.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, boy.
Well, I've done character voices my whole life, and I've done many Johnny Cash shows with Johnny in country music as a disc jockey. And my mom was with me at the last show I did with Johnny Cash. And I got an idea. I said, "Mom, give me a dollar bill."
"Okay, Joey."
So Hazel
gave
me a dollar bill. And I leaned into Johnny's room and I said, "Johnny, would you sign my mama's cash?" He looked up and he said, "Believe it or not, I've never heard that one before." And he signed it and he said, "Do you want June to sign it?" I said, "Sure." And he goes, "June, would you sign Mr. Disc Jockey's mama's dollar bill?" So she came up.
"Why, sure, John."
She came running in. She signed it. And then he said, he called me Mr. Disc Jockey, as did Waylon Jennings. That was just their thing. He said, "Mr. Disc Jockey, do me a favor." I said, "Sure." He said, "When you go out there, you do you and let me do me." I said, "No problem, John. No problem at all." He had pneumonia that day. He didn't know it yet. And so I can kind of relate to Johnny. He almost died. It was 1987, and he had an out-of-body experience. We read it in his book, didn't we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Cash book or whatever. But, he was so sick. And I asked him before he went on if he was feeling okay. He said, "I certainly hope so," and he walked, just picked himself up, walked out, did a two-hour show. Didn't look like he was sick at all. Came backstage right after. I had my mom and stepfather with me, and he passed out right as soon as he got backstage. Yeah, amazing. Mm-hmm. He was a consummate performer. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Now, what other entertainers did you work with? Who did you work with?
Oh, in country music a lot. Mm-hmm. Waylon Jennings.
Did Reba McEntire?
No, Tammy Wynette's the one that threw the rib at me.
Yeah.
We got to hear that story.
I was hosting the Tammy Wynette show at the Brandywine on Highway 1, just out between Baltimore and Philly. That was a big country venue. So I was walking back to tell her she was about to go on, and a rib smacked right by my face. And she said, "Oh, honey, I'm sorry. I thought it was my manager." I said, "All right, Tammy." I said, "It's about time to go on. I'm going to bring you on, okay?" "Okay, I won't throw no more food."
Mama Judd.
Mama Judd.
Oh.
Okay. Mama Judd was, she was my favorite. Naomi.
Oh, yes.
I told a joke before I brought them on. We did a concert in Valley Forge, close to Pennsylvania, or Philly, where George Washington was with his troops. And they had a big concert arena there with a round theater in the round. The stage went around in circles, and they just stand there and go around. And so I told this joke about Sweet Tater. I said, Sweet Tater came to her mama and said, Mama, I know who I'm going to marry. I know it. She said, Mama said, well, who you going to marry, Sweet Tater? Sweet Tater says, I'm going to marry Dan Rather on the CBS News, Mama. That's back when Dan Rather was on CBS News. And she said, well, you can't marry Dan Rather on the CBS News, Sweet Tater. She said, well, why, Mama? Because you're a Sweet Tater and Dan Rather's just a commentator.
That's one of my favorites.
Naomi just loved me after that. And I did. Little did I know, Sweet Tater was her nickname for Ashley Judd. Who she said at that time, you just wait, my star's at home. She was only 16 at that time. Ashley, you just
wait.
And
this is G-rated humor, too.
Yeah,
she's probably like that, too.
Yeah, she liked that.
Definitely.
Yeah. So Naomi, and then every show after that, she'd say, hi, Sweet Tater.
My goodness. Now, some memorable spots. Laurie, you're, of course, in the advertising business, and you've been selling spots all over the country. Some of the spots that really hit, you remember some of that or just thought that really took off?
Well, Smidgen, of course.
Well, the Smidgen one.
With Patriots. Smidgen.
You mean national spots or local?
Well, the ones you guys
local,
did.
Local, ones we've done.
Did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, goodness. There is a...
I recorded, you got it made in the shade with the RA, First Advantage Realty. Ba-da-da.
A lot of jingles. A company called Mixer Studios with a partner and did jingles for Evansville. So we did Schneider Heat and Air jingle. Like you said, ERA.
She sang Schneider.
We've done
Schneider Heat and Air is on the way. Schneider Heat. Yeah.
But we've done a lot of those, and that's the most memorable. We think music imaging really works.
Well, what's the creative process of coming up with a jingle?
Well, first of all, you have to be a half bubble off plum out of kilter. I took guitar lessons from one of the greatest guitar players in the world who's still living here in Evansville, 86 years old, Ron Pritchett, who was Boots Randolph's original guitar player and bass player. Boots, of course, from Evansville Central, and Ron went to Central as well with Boots. And he decided he didn't want to make his wife a band wife. And back then it was all bus travel.
Mm-hmm.
And they would travel around in buses and the wives would stay in Nashville and, you know, just kind of be bored and hang out. So he didn't want to make his wife a band wife. So he decided to start teaching guitar lessons. And he's taught about every guitar player.
Andy Timmons, who's
from Evansville and now a very famous player. He's Olivia Newton-John's guitar player now.
Mm-hmm.
And he does jingles in Dallas, Texas. A lot of good guitar players. Mike McKinney, you probably heard of Cibico, that band mm-hmm. that used to be around, practically. And so knowing your instrument is the best way to start in making jingles or writing music, period. So you just kind of noodle around and noodle mm-hmm. with the name of the business. And sometimes the name of the business comes up with the song itself because of the you know, cadence or the rhythm.
And, of course, you have to sell it to the client, too.
They
have to buy it.
Client has to like it, mm-hmm. sure.
Do they like the first take?
Well, sometimes. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they like me playing it better than the singer and players I get.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's kind of, you know. I can't sing them all, but
now,
you can sing them all.
You guys have worked at a lot of different radio stations, and did they all have the same kind of formats? Were they country? Mm-hmm. Were they rock? Were they gospel?
I was country to begin with, and my first job in Portland, Indiana, was called Potpourri. You remember that format?
No, I don't.
It was a mix. We would play Frank Sinatra, and then we'd play I Love the Nightlife, I Love the Boogie,
and PG-14?
PG-14. Yeah, WPGW, AM and FM, Portland, Indiana.
I guess I did work at a potpourri station. I worked at WGBF, and every disc jockey would play their own favorite music.
Right.
Sure.
So if someone would come on, they'd play jazz. Next person would come on, play gospel. Next one to play big band. Mm-hmm. So I guess that was a potpourri station.
They probably did call it potpourri.
No, they didn't.
Or
they
middle
didn't.
Of the road. Not middle of the road. That wasn't sort of.
It was a mishmash, and you really didn't know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the way this station was. Mm-hmm. And one day I went into what we called the grave, where all the old records went to sit, and got the Beatles Revolution. Put it on. In came the owner of the station. Where did you find that record? He was mad. Rob Brandon. Oh. And so I had to throw that record away. But, yeah, we play some strange stuff.
So, Lori, have you done any radio work on air?
A little bit commercial recording. Mm-hmm. If a client or the station needed a female voice, but
you voice-tracked at Rock 105, didn't you?
No. I voice-tracked in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Okay.
A little bit. But that was short-lived. Uh-huh. I'm better with clients and not behind mics and cameras or
She's
anything.
She's got a face for TV. I got a face for radio.
Now, of course, radio, I mean, you've got to get those listeners. You've got to have some stunts sometimes to get the audience. Remember any stunts that you maybe were involved in, Joe and Lori?
Okay.
I know about Joe better than
I do.
Okay.
I was too tired during the radio years.
Malia was born, and it was Fall Fest.
Yes. And so the next day, I got the two heralds.
Yep.
I got Harold Nix, who was the owner of Western Ribeye and Ribs.
Was this at Wiki?
This was at Wiki.
Okay.
And Harold Kempf, who's the founder of the Donut Bank Bakery. And I had Harold make the largest bun in the world, Harold Kempf. Mm-hmm. And I had Harold Nix make the largest brain sandwich in the whole world. And we sold it at Fall Festival, Thursday at the Fall Festival, on October the 9th.
Mm-hmm. Day after Malia was born.
Of 1992. And we were on the front page of the Evansville Courier Press, me and the two heralds, in this huge sandwich. Gosh, it was this big.
Sold for charity, wasn't it?
We sold it for, Easter seals.
Easter seals, yes.
Was it devoured?
It was devoured.
Okay, good.
All 154 pieces that we got from this. So we made $154.
All right, guys. All right. My guests are Joe Blair and Lori Maynor. Blair, Joe recovering from a serious bout with COVID-19, more than a month in the hospital. Lori also diagnosed, but mostly asymptomatic. We've been talking about that earlier. The disease did separate them on their wedding anniversary. They did celebrate Joe's 60th birthday with a parade outside the hospital. Okay, we got that all tied up.
Yeah.
Now, coming up, we're going to talk more about the couple's popular TV shows, Tasting the Tri-State, Golfing the Tri-State, a new format for Joe's show.
Yeah.
What are some hidden gems out there for local golfers? Joe will share that. And then Lori will talk about some of the goodies she has devoured over the years, Tasting the Tri-State, some of her favorite entrees and maybe desserts as well. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management. And Joe says hi to Jeffrey.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Hey, buddy.
There we go. We'll be right back. Here's how Lori Maynor Blair introduces her TV show, Tasting the Tri-State.
Welcome to Tasting the Tri-State. We're dining all over, discovering exciting local cuisine, sampling new creations, and learning what makes your favorite dishes so special. Just wait till you see what we're cooking up this week on
Tasting the Tri-State.
We're at North Park. Pie Pan. The Pie Pan. Funny enough, this was actually the first show that Tasting the Tri-State did, the first restaurant. Yeah. 6 years ago.
6 years ago.
And Jackie, general manager at Pie Pan.
Yeah.
Pie Pan is just so well known for breakfast. But Pie Pan also has more. It's all day.
Yeah, we have a full lunch menu with daily specials every day. We have a full dinner menu.
Right.
As well as the bakery, catering. We do a lot here at the Pie Pan.
So are you cooking with me?
Yes.
We're going to cook together?
Yes, we're going to cook. We're going to come up with all kinds of good stuff to eat.
Old favorites and new items.
Yeah, new menu items.
That sounds wonderful. Yeah. Some breakfast,
maybe some lunch, a little bit of dessert.
Dessert's great. All right, I can't wait to see what all we're going to be making in the kitchen at the Pie Pan North Park. This is Tasting the Tri-State.
This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back with more from the Blairs, Joe and Lori. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and if you are just joining us, my guests are Joe and Lori Maynard Blair with ICR Advertising, hosts of two local TV shows, Tasting the Tri-State and Golfing the Tri-State. Joe recovering from COVID-19, doing well, looking great. The virus did send him to the hospital for over a month with several stays in intensive care. His wife, Lori, was also diagnosed with COVID-19 with very few symptoms, thank goodness. And we were talking during the break. Joe, you were an Iron Man at the mic. You didn't miss a show?
I didn't miss a show ever in radio.
That's incredible.
From 1978 through 2011.
What were you on? Yes. Were you taking something or
coffee?
Oh,
way
lots
too much coffee.
Of coffee.
Way too much. I drank a pot. Well, you know, you drink a cup of coffee and it goes down to a half, and you toss it out and get fresh because it's cold. And I did that maybe 20 times, so I had at least 10 cups of coffee.
Now he's down to 3.
Now I'm down to, yeah.
Well, that's a staple at radio stations.
Absolutely.
You got to have some coffee, especially the morning show.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Gosh.
And he'd get up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
And you have to be wired to do that.
Yeah.
And my mom, Hazel, taught me to drink black coffee.
Yep.
She said, Joey, if you're going to drink coffee, drink it black. It's just, there's way too many health concerns with all that cream and the sugar. Just drink it black.
Health concerns.
Yes, health concerns. Hazel.
Black coffee, yeah.
Yeah.
Any special brand that you would recommend, Joe?
Continental Coffee.
Well, yeah.
From Toledo, Ohio.
That's
it's
good.
Delicious. I lived in Toledo. You know when people say, holy Toledo? I actually lived there.
During the winter?
Toledo
in the winter, on the lake.
It's a mess.
Oh,
right there on Lake Erie.
Oh.
Actually, I was in Maumee, which is just south. And Maumee River is one of the two rivers in North America that flows north.
Oh, yeah.
So I lived right across the street on River Road from the Maumee River.
Wind chill.
Oh gosh. Definitely.
Yeah, we think it's cold here.
Oh, man. They actually play hockey up there.
Oh.
Yeah. Detroit fans.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Joe, of course, your voice is your livelihood. Has COVID-19 affected your on-air delivery, your presentations?
It would have if I had to do a show from the hospital. Because, you know, he was kind of sounded like the old guy on Laughing. You know, with Bruce Buzzy hitting with the purse.
All right.
So you're back to 100%, you think?
I think so.
Good. You sound great.
My legs are... They feel good. They don't look like I'm 90.
Mm-hmm.
90-year-olds. Okay. But my legs, I mean, you know, I'm 60, and my legs look 30 years older after COVID because you couldn't get out of bed. They had an alarm on my bed. Mm-hmm. If I got out, it would go off, and I accidentally set it off a few times.
Mm-hmm. Did they run in there and
nurses
and
would
berate you?
Yeah, what happened? What happened? I was leaning over for my, you know, whatever, and it went off.
Now, Lori, you're the judge here. Is he strong as ever? Is his voice sounded good?
Yes, he's 100% back to normal.
Well, good. And you would know, wouldn't you?
I do. Well, 21 years of marriage, you kind of know the guy a little bit.
And
yes,
you know,
he's doing great.
And you know what the clients want, too. They don't want somebody that's...
Well, sure. He is doing every project that we are needing him to do. He's doing a lot of voice over work for long-form videos. He's writing a lot of music.
Doing the show.
Doing the golf show, helping with the tasting show. So it's been
good.
Great.
I'm executive producer of Tasting the Tri-State.
Can I brag on Joe just for a second?
Go for it.
Okay. Can I go back to the agency? So we started
sure.
the agency
yeah.
in 2008, and it's called ICR because of I Can Relate because of the book he wrote.
Right.
So we honored him.
In 2005, wasn't it?
It was 2008.
2008.
The book was 2005.
Right.
Oh,
yes. Right.
Okay. But your agency was in 2008.
Yes.
Okay. There we go.
So... we had 15, 20 clients to do work for, and I was relying on radio stations, music a little bit for, you know, voices, because Joe was doing the voices and voicing of the spots. Well, when Joe came along to ICR July of 2011,
when Malia went to Ball State,
we were looking into buying music. which if anybody has seen the prices of music to use commercially, to be able to use underneath a commercial or a project or anything for that matter, it's expensive. I mean, it could go up to
$2,000, $3,000 for a 30-second cut.
Crazy.
And
so,
that's for a limited time.
Yeah.
Because it's coming from some studio. And
right. Naturally, they're going to be paid for their work and talent.
Yeah. Yeah. So, professional musicians and studio time.
So Joe said, I'm going to write some music. Now we're up to over 1,000 songs. We have a website called 421 Tracks that Joe has written all of the music, which we use, and they're 2-minute music beds.
Mm-hmm.
So for $42.10 a year, we wanted to make it, we wanted to be very giving with this.
Especially for students.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Film students who can't afford to, you know, pay
$3,000. We've got all the music we need, and he writes music every single day.
That's great.
So, yeah, that's one of the other things that we do with the company. But, you know, you talk about jingle writing and all the custom music. Every piece of music is individual for each client. And so it'll never be used by anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of neat, you know, with imaging. But I'm just bragging on my husband.
Well, that's
he's
fine.
Amazing.
And I had the idea for the golf show while I was still on the radio.
Yes.
I got bit by the golf bug when I was 49,
mm-hmm.
almost 50, never golfed before, thought my brothers were sissies, you know, and of course you're a sissy if you golf. And then I got bit by, I still have
Who's
bite
a sissy
marks.
Now?
I still have bite marks, David, from the golf thing. And it was the H&H Music Scramble with our buddy Norm.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, I still have the bite marks.
We were just playing.
It was
playing.
At Hamilton's,
mm-hmm.
now
oh, yeah.
Thunderbolt.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Hamilton kicked off the thing, and I just fell in love.
He well, said, good. Guess what? I want to do a golf show. I went, oh, man. What are you talking about? We've got 15 clients. We're working with a golf show. We don't even own a camera.
And I said, just wait. I got an idea for a restaurant show, too.
Oy.
Oh, yeah.
It was the same exact format.
Yep.
The first year of the golf show and Tasting the Tri-State. Just the same format.
Mm-hmm.
It well, was easy to film.
Let's do Tasting the Tri-State. You started your new season after COVID-19.
Oh, yes.
Able to get back in the kitchen.
Yes.
At these restaurants. And you went to the Hilltop. That was your first one this season?
Yes. That was last week. And we've got about 9-10 shows scheduled now for this season before the golfing season starts. So mm-hmm. our filming season is opposite of
mm-hmm. sure.
golfing.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we did not film from, well, all of last year. It's been almost a whole full year that we filmed.
I think before, February was the last one
right.
before they closed everything down.
So, when COVID hit, we really had to coordinate which shows we could run because we did run reruns, and we do frequently because we've got 125 shows. So, but some restaurants have closed. There's some, you know.
Sure.
And we had 7 new shows that we hadn't edited yet to go on. That we were kind of holding our breath, going, oh, I hope these.
Oh, sure.
So
they stay in business, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Most of them
did. A couple
did.
Of them didn't.
Yeah, most of them mm-hmm. did, though, thankfully. So we've got editors who are editing those shows. And but, yeah, we were at the Hilltop, and it's so neat to go back behind the scenes. Because I really think people want to see who's cooking my food. Who are these people?
And sure, there's a veteran cook there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Randy, who's been there
Chef
for
Randy.
30 years. He was a hoot.
1992.
Yep.
And the Marks family of Marks Barbecue fame has owned that building since 1839, since its inception.
Mm-hmm.
It was the George Marks Saloon. And they have been the owners and landlord of the Hilltop Inn ever since. So it's new ownership, but it's not.
Mm-hmm. You know, they just, it was a saloon.
It's kind of neat.
Back then, it was a general store and trading post. And then upstairs were rooms for let. Just
room.
You know,
stagecoach travelers.
Right. They would do training. The pictures in the Hilltop, the legacy is just so neat. And of course, everybody thinks of the brain sandwich at Hilltop, which they were one day away from getting the shipment. So I didn't have that on the show. But when we were posting on Facebook about wherever we are, we always post where we've been. And Everybody's going, did you eat it? Did you have the brain sandwich?
Did you have a brain?
I have to say, I've never eaten a brain sandwich in my life. But they're so interesting to me. And it's indigenous to the west side of Evansville. It's the taste of the west side and all that, that heritage. You know, it just means a lot. It's a fabric.
She has, however, had a pig's knuckle.
So I love a pig's knuckle.
She loves a good pig knuckle.
Now, what do you serve with a pig's knuckle to?
Well, we had kraut.
Well,
it was our first date down at Germania.
Oh,
it was our first
go.
Date. Yeah. We snuck off.
We had a pig's knuckle.
Oh, that's romantic.
Beans.
Yeah, it really is.
It was really romantic
after
the beans.
Thing.
And those German potato salads. Oh.
Delish.
Oh. Scratch yourself like a dog.
Like a dog.
So you also have to, you have a tough job, Laura. You have to sample these desserts as well. And each individual restaurant has kind of a signature dessert.
Yes, yes. And that's part of the tasting table, you know, at the end of the meal. And at the end of the show.
She does just desserts.
Yeah, the end of the show is a five-minute segment of me cooking with somebody in the community. Yeah. So we make something else. I eat way too much dessert.
Any favorite dessert you want to share?
I love the peanut butter pie that Randy makes at the Hilltop. Because
so good.
I like fluffy whippy, but this is dense. This is like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Not sorry.
So it's rich.
It was really good.
Is it different? You have to have coffee with it? Is it one of those kind of desserts?
It would go great.
It would go great with coffee. Mm-hmm. But oh, desserts. Yeah, there are so many desserts that I've eaten.
You're better a Sterling.
One of the two.
Okay, now Golfing in the Tri-State, that's Joe's show. You have a new format this season. Tell us about that, Joe.
Well, after 8 years of stinking up the joint, I decided I'm going to stop golfing on the show. See, it's been me golfing with pros and for nine holes. And the very first season, I forget who it was. It might have been Jeff Howerton from Sultan's Run. Might have been Bill Rendell, who's now at Henderson Bridges of Henderson Golf Course, who is Mark O'Meara's first cousin, by the way. That's an interesting thing a lot of people don't know. Bill Rendell, Mark O'Meara's first cousin. Their moms were sisters, and he got Mark golfing. Because his mom said, you go with Bill, because he's too young to be on the golf course. Mark O'Meara then... two majors later, you know. Well, anyway, he said, you ought to do what they used to do with Shell's World of Golf, with the guy named Jim and Gene Sarazen and all those guys, and have two of us pros play, and you do the commentating. And that's been in the back of my mind for 8 years. So I thought, well, I'm 60 now. I think I'll just let the young pups play golf. And I'll be the MC. I'll do my best David James up there with my microphone. But, yeah, so I'm going to do that now. And I'm excited about it because that way I can have a co-host, too. I would love, I haven't talked to him about it yet, but Jerry Schreiber, to get Jerry out there with me.
You have a color man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Be my color commentator. I like it.
Wouldn't that be great? Jerry Schreiber, you know, nine-time city champ. Kevin Wassmer, 110. But
there's a lot of great guys who could do color out there.
Oh, yeah.
And they could have all kinds of great stories about former rounds that they've had with different people and everything.
I remember when Jeff Howerton was just in fourth grade.
That's right. Yeah. I remember that time I hit a ball in the tree and killed a squirrel or something. You know, yeah, things like that.
That'll be fun. So yeah, a new format. I'll still be on the show, but those folks will be doing the golfing.
David, I know you eat food, but do you golf?
I have tried golf. I'm not very good. I was a tennis fanatic for a while. That was my thing. I got into tennis in my late 20s, and then I was a fanatic. I played all the time and everything.
Neat.
And did that until the knee started aching and everything. But that was my passion, tennis.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. I loved doing that. But never really got into golf. I enjoy watching golf. Mm-hmm. Now it's so neat with all the technology. They show the trajectory of the ball.
Incredible.
Going.
Isn't that
I
neat?
Mean, that is really neat. And they switch so fast to different. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no lag time at all.
And those camera people following the ball.
I know. And they're up in these lofty perches on these courses.
Mm-hmm.
And the courses are gorgeous, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, Victoria is a fabulous course, definitely. All right, guys, we're going to wrap this up. Thanks for sharing your personal stories with us. And, of course, let's don't bury the lead, COVID-19 survivors, both of you. Now, you have a history, of course, of what the virus is. It's something to be laughed at. It's real. Mm-hmm. It causes separation with the families and, of course, the dread of not knowing what's going to happen next. So any final words to our listeners about the experience that you went through?
Well, definitely wear your mask until things are safe. Mm-hmm. And even when things are deemed safe, I think there might be a new trend in America.
Maybe the new normal.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
In large groups. Yeah.
I mean,
we feel safer to wear it.
Flu, yeah.
Right?
And everything else. You know, I think a lot of people continue to wear masks. And
I think it's a sign of respect for the other person too.
Mm-hmm.
Go into a business with a mask, and mm-hmm. I'm concerned about your health as well.
Most definitely. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just as important.
Yes.
That way.
So, and the vaccines are extremely important. And I think that's what's going to stop it.
So you guys will be getting a vaccine as soon as it's available to you guys?
We're hoping so.
Yeah.
We're on the next wave of it. Right? So we're not there yet, but we're looking forward to it.
So you're very busy with the advertising business, and that seems to be going well.
Yes.
It really is. It's a lot of fun. We love our clients.
Mm-hmm.
Love doing their commercials. And like we're doing a mail out thing for a client, which is, you know, there are all kinds of things.
There's a lot of things, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And your family's well?
Families are everybody's happy and healthy and safe. And thank God they're in town with us. We're really blessed with them being so close and being able to see them and hang out with them.
Well, you are a wonderful couple. I've really enjoyed our conversation. We've had a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us, David.
Joe and Lori Blair, thank you so much. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management. And this final footnote, we don't want to forget the Blair pets. There's Lincoln, a rescue cat that showed up at their business and stayed, and Golden Retriever sisters from different litters, Sadie and Goldie.